Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 395, and we're in Deuteronomy chapter 17. And last lesson, we stopped at verse 12. We're going to read it again. And Moses here is giving instructions to the people when they have something that they cannot resolve on a local basis to go to the priests, and in accordance with the law of God, with the Torah of God, not their own opinion, they're going to render judgment, and then it's up to them to respond in a proper way. And those who don't, this is what you read in verse 12, and the man that does presumptuously, bezadon, you see, in a malicious way, that's really what it means more than presumptuously, bezadon means malicious, in not hearkening unto the priest that stands to minister there before the Lord, your God, in other words, is not willing to obey the voice of God. That's basically the bottom line. We're not talking about a man that he comes before the priest. You see, he may take it like that. You know, just some people say, well, it's just your opinion. You see? Well, obviously, he does not see God in the matter. And he had no intent when he came before the priest to submit to the will of God. So we're talking about a presumptuous person, about a person who is self-willed, and he wants things to go only his way, or else he's not going to accept it. And obviously, he's not a man of faith. So this is what God is saying here. And the man that does presumptuously in not hearkening unto the priest that stands to minister there before the Eternal, your God. That's what he's coming before. You see? And that's what he forgets, obviously. Or unto the judge, even that man shall die. You see? Because that man places himself in the position of the devil, an adversary of God. And therefore, God is not going to allow such a person to remain alive, because people like that are going to infest the minds and the hearts of their own family members, of their own children, and those around them. And that's exactly what the devil had done when he was Lucifer. You see, he gradually began to infest the minds and the hearts of many of the angels around him, until he got about one third of the angels to follow him. And they became demons. And so, for the benefit of all those around him, he's going to be put to death. And so he says, and he shall exterminate. And it's very, you know, very, very strong, very powerful word, will be arta. And the word biarta in Hebrew, or exterminate, comes from the word to set on fire. You see, burn them up. You see, and when you take something and you burn it, you exterminate it. It doesn't exist anymore. It becomes ashes. You know, from bi'ata comes be'ra, fire, and so forth. And that's what God is saying here. Just putting, and probably that could be the way he was put to death. You see? And just set him on fire, whatever. That possibility, because they use that word, I don't know. But this is what he says here. You shall exterminate the evil from Israel. And all the people shall hear and fear and do not more presumptuously. You see, so it's important to make sure that others do not follow in his example. And when you have cancerous cells that are very malignant in your body, you see, the doctor goes after it, you know, in the chemotherapy, whatever, they zap it, they burn it. You see, otherwise it's going to infest all the healthy cells around it. And that's not the time for pity. That's not the time for mercy. The patient doesn't ask the physician to be merciful to the cells. You see, he wants it all out, gone, destroyed. Otherwise, he'll be gone. And that's, in essence, what God is saying here. And unfortunately, in the society in which we are, man thinks that he's smarter than God. All of those people out there, you know, parading, whenever there is a death sentence being carried out, you know, their own human opinions. And they obviously don't sit down to realize what they're doing. And they don't see it from God's point of view. They don't see it even from the point of view of the good of the society. And that one day that person that they are parading for, you know, with candles sometimes and things like that. And people like that, you know, they kill anybody. They can kill their own children. What would they do then? And so that's what God is saying. That's the law of God. You get rid of it so that others would not hear and following his example, if he gets away with it, because that's basically what people do when they hear about somebody getting away with murder, they say, well, if he can do it, I can do it too. And so God basically is protecting the society, and so it's best for one to be gone than for many to be destroyed. And when people understand that, they don't have any objections to the death penalty, because the death penalty is a part of the law of God, and it's going to be reinstituted again. When people choose to go their own way in their own way, you see, and here it's not even a person that murdered or stole. He refuses to hear the word of God, to obey, to submit to God, you see. And God is not about to allow such an infestation to spread around among his people and to cause many to become rebels, because otherwise all of them are going to be hurt in so many ways. And so this is what is the verdict. Very plain, very simple. Verse 14, when you are come unto the land which the Lord your God gives you, and shall possess it, and shall dwell therein, and shall say, I will set a king over me, like all the nations that are around about me. In essence, is foretelling them that that's the way they're going to behave, based on their human nature, based on their track record. In other words, he knows that they're not going to trust God. They're not going to look up to him, and that's exactly what happened. When they came to Samuel, they, in essence, as God told him, they rejected me. Not you, Samuel, but they have rejected me, that I would not be king over them. So God already knows that this is the pattern, this is the track record of his people, and that's what they're going to do and behave. You see, they want to see somebody, just like in the Mount Sinai. Moses was gone, went up to the mountain, they wanted to see God. You know, they lost their sense of security. They're physical, they're faithless, and that's the way they function. And to this very day, we're paying the penalty for it. And so he says, this is what you're going to say. We want to be just like all the nations around us. He called them not to be like the nations around them. You see, to be unlike them, to be unique. People who trust in God, in a living being who lives forever, you see, who is ultimately, the ultimate of everything, in power and glory and might and majesty and blessings and everything else. What do you need a poor replica of that, human replica, an inferior replica of that? Well, human beings are that way. And so he says, okay, if that's the way you're going to be, we're going to do it in a certain way. He says, you shall in any wise set him king over you, whom the Lord your God shall choose. In other words, the only king that you can have is the one that God is going to approve. So don't do your own thing, because the people think that the voters know what they are doing. No, they don't know what they are doing. They don't know the person from Adam. All they know is what they're being told about the person. They really do not know the person who is being elected for whatever office. You see, the whole thing is a charade. There's nothing real in it. It's all a bunch of lies. It's image makers that tell you about that person, that he cares about this and that and the other thing. You don't know their personal lives. You don't know what they're after. And to begin with, most seek their own anyway. And so he, in essence, tells them, at least rely on the advice and the guidance of your God. You try to tell kids like that, when they choose a mate, at least listen to some advice of your parents or people who know better, but they want to do their own thing. Well, that's basically what Israel is going to do here, and therefore God tells them, in essence, at least look to God to choose for you a man that is really good for you. And so this is what we read here. You shall in any wise set him king over you, whom the Lord your God shall choose. One from among your brethren shall you set king over you. Not a foreigner. Because a foreigner, obviously, is not going to be interested in your special needs, in your care, in your concerns, things like that. He's just going to care about his own. You may not put a foreigner over you who is not your brother. And it's interesting that he even has to say that, because they may get to a point where they do not trust anybody around, you see. And so sometimes people go somewhere else to find somebody they can trust, because maybe everybody's corrupt all around them. And God says, don't do that. That's against the law. because it's not going to be good for you. Because foreigners have a foreign mind, and they're going to do their own thing, like they do in other nations, and it's going to lead you astray. And generally, they're militaristically oriented, and they're obviously, in those days, were idol worship oriented. So he said, get one of your own brothers. The same faith, the same people, the same concerns, the same needs. Verse 16, only he shall not multiply horses to himself, so this become the law of the king. He cannot be a foreigner, and he cannot be the kind of a person that wants to multiply horses. Well, what does that mean? That means that he's a man of war. He's interested in conquerors, in fighting others. God says, I don't want this kind of a king. You see? And he says, don't look for a person like that who wants to multiply his horses to himself. In other words, a person who is very much interested in armaments. Like a lot of people like that. They're a warmonger, you know, that's all they want to do. You know, all kind of excuses, but generally, that's what they're after. And you find them in history, now and then, people who rise to power, and they promise a lot of great things for their own peoples, like Hitler and many others. And the way they're going to do it is by going to war against others and grabbing from others what they want. In other words, a bully. He says, don't appoint a bully over you. That's in essence what he's telling them. Only he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt. Why would they go back to Egypt when they, you know, they live in their own land? Well, he does not want that king to strike alliances with Egypt and, you know, and use a certain number of people to go over there and buy horses, you know, and trade with horses. In other words, again, armaments, arm dealers, in modern terms. Doesn't mean that he's going to take the whole nation and go back to Egypt. You know, Egypt, they've got their own land. They're not interested in the whole nation coming back and dwelling in their midst at this point. You see, so you have to understand what he's talking about. You know, a nation is not about to go back to Egypt when they came out of that place. And the whole area is anyway devastated and was going to be for quite a while because of what God brought on Egypt. So you have to understand what he's really talking about here. And he says, don't you know, choose a king of that nature. So he would not return the people to Egypt to the end that he should multiply horses. You see, that's the reason for it. In other words, he's going to send some people over there to purchase horses so he can be as militaristic, because the children of Israel were in Egypt. That's all they've known. Leaders who were into conquest. You see, militaristic leaders. And that's in essence what Moses himself used to be. You see, he was a general from historic records and the armed forces of Egypt. And armies in those days meant only one thing, not only defense of their own country, but basically they wanted to conquer other lands. That's how they enriched themselves. And so don't have that kind of a king. And he says, for as much as the Lord has said unto you, you shall henceforth return no more that way. Either to do commerce with them or business or whatever it may be, because if you do, you're going to strike alliances with them. Pretty soon you're going to become just like you used to be before, idol worshippers. You know that, since you are very, you know, very familiar with them anyway. And so verse 17, it says, neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away. You see? Now, what does it mean that his heart turn not away? Well, people in those days, the kings, the rulers and all that, they struck alliances with other nations, and the way they did it, they always would bring their daughter with them and give it to the king. Well, in the process of doing that, he's going to end up with many women from different nationalities who are going to bring their gods. That means they're going to bring idol worship into the land. And that's exactly what King Solomon had done. He brought all those foreign women, well, you know, the kings that made alliances with him, they came and brought their daughters. It's not that he went over there and got them. And he ended up with an awful lot of women. And obviously, he's not interested in so many women. The reason why it happened that he had so many, because that was a custom in those days. You bring your daughter as a gift. And so obviously, since people came from all over, he ended up with an awful lot of them. But the problem was, not just in the women, the problem was in the idolatry that they brought with them. Each one came with their own god. And so she wanted her children to worship, you know, the god that she believed in. And she was going to teach her children that way. You see? And pretty soon the whole nation follows the examples, you know, of the queens or the wives of the king. And so God, in essence, is trying to prevent all kind of problems by setting these laws. And so he says, he shall not multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away, neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. So it should not be a greedy one, covetous one. That's what he's after. You see? So in essence, he's telling them, you should, in essence, take a king that is caring about you. You see, he cares about you. He cares about serving you and helping you and all that. Not about his own appetites. And otherwise, you'll end up with a lot of troubles. Well, in essence, that's what government is all about, unfortunately. They want armaments as soon as they take over. You know, they want to be powerful and strong. They want to eliminate the competition. You see, and if they have problems all around, you know, with nations, things like that, they want to have a big army so they can go and destroy their enemies and then capture their lands and take their riches. And that's what government has been, you know, in the past many thousands of years. And to this very day, they function in different ways. And they enrich themselves in the process, and that's what they're after, and they enrich all those who join them, and they impoverish the nation. They impoverish other nations. And God was not interested in this kind of a rule. Because that's not of him, that's of another spirit. And so that's what he's saying here. He does not want a person to be covetous for money, covetous for arms, covetous for women, you see, for anything. But in contrast, this is what he wants. Verse 18. And it shall be when he sits upon the throne of his kingdom that he shall write him a copy of this law in a book, of this Torah. You see? This is what should be his desire, to walk in the path and in the way of God, to serve God, to fear God, and to serve his people. A humble person, a meek person, an obedient person, you see, a caring person. And when you study the law and you walk in it and you obey it, you're going to be that kind of a person. And so that became a part of the law. Every king had to do it. And so he says, when he sits on the throne, that's his first task. Not to consolidate his power, you know, and get rid of the enemies and begin to overlord it over his people. No, sit down, write a book. Copy the book, that is, and the book of the law, the entirety of it, you see. And the terminology in verse 18, and it shall be when he sits upon the throne of the kingdom that he shall write him a copy of the law. In Hebrew, v'katav lo et mishne ha-Torah. In other words, he should write a second Torah. What does it mean, a second Torah? There is already one in the hands of the priest. Now he writes another one, that becomes the second one. And what is he supposed to do with it? And so he says, first he should copy this book of the law, and not just from anybody, anywhere, but out of that which is before the priests, the Levites. That's the original. That's the correct one. You see? And not a perverted one, that later on it's possible to happen. But he said, just, you always go to the priesthood. And so in going to the priesthood also, he's going to submit to the rule of the priesthood, in other words, the rule of the law, the rule of God. So the two had to be linked, not apart from each other. You see, there is no separation in God's kingdom and God's government between government and church. You know, as they call it today. And I shouldn't call it government and church. It's God. It's not church. There shouldn't be any separation between the government and the law of God. And it's unfortunate that they have chosen that terminology, church and state. You see? It's as if the power and authority and guidance and direction and wisdom and knowledge and understanding and all that comes from a church. It doesn't come from a church. It comes from God. So it should have been the Torah and not church. And when the church had taken over, then the perverted and warped and demented and deceived people, you know, with their own concepts and concoction, you know, of their own brain, whatever they've invented, when they call it religion. And it's not church and state issue with God. It is the law of God, the Torah of God, you see. And his people and all are to be governed by the same law. And there isn't any civil law and religious law. It's one, as far as God is concerned. But because people do their own thing, that's the reason why there is a need for separation. That's what the problem is. It's because of abuse, not because of the right use, by the so-called the church. And what is known as a church are anything but the people of God in many ways. And so he says, this is where they should go, to the priest and the Levites, and from there should copy that law with his own hand, and it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life. This is what should guide him. That's a constitution. And if he's going to govern his people and do this or do that, it should be based on this law, and that's how God reigns in that nation, in that kingdom, through the king, if he's going to abide by the Torah. But if he's not, obviously, he's in essence booting God out of his throne, you see, and does not allow him to reign over his people through the king. So they want, in essence, an intermediary, you know, between them and God, just like they wanted Moses to do the talking, the speaking, and not God himself. So at least he said, if this is what you're going to do, make sure that he does it not apart from me, not in a separation between so-called church and state, but being under the Torah that I gave to all of Israel. Otherwise, you're going to have nothing but chaos and confusion. And when people rejected this law of the king that God gave them, when government rejected that and began to do their own thing, well, what we ended up with is basically all the mess that we see all around us and all the corruption that is in government, because none of them, generally speaking, none of them fears God. None of them obeys the law of God. None of them writes the law of God and meditates on it day and night. Period. None of them. You see? And because of that, we have all the corruption. You know, they may have partial faith, partial knowledge and understanding, partial desire to serve, and things like that in a righteous manner, under God. That's all. But none of them is willing to go all the way. And so, this is what he says here. And it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, to keep all the words of this law, not his own, and these statutes, not his own. He's not allowed to come with any law or any statutes that are contrary to this law, in conjunction with it, fine, but never against it. You see? And that he should do them. Why? What happens if he doesn't do that? You read in verse 20. That his heart be not lifted up above his, not subjects, but brethren. You see? And when a king, when a ruler, when a government forget about God and forget who the people that they are serving are, they begin to think of them as subjects. You know, we are the top, you are the bottom. And the same attitude, which is a demonic attitude, entered into the so-called church. We're the clergy, you are the lay members. What do you mean lay members? You know, people that you lay on, you know, over them and lay them down and walk all over them. Where do they get this terminology? Not from God. You see? That's when people, you know, exalt themselves, uplift themselves, and abase others. That's all it means. So we talk about lay person, lay member. You know, stupid person, he doesn't know much. I'm going to tell you what to do. And that's demonic thinking and demonic mind that comes up with this kind of terminology, and that's exactly what happened. You know, we think, well, that's just a jargon, you know, the way you use it, you know, in layman's terminology, you see, instead of the professional, where they know what they're talking about, and things like that. But all that comes from haughtiness and self-exaltation and pride doesn't come from God. You see, that's why he says, you know, you sit down and read the same book of the law that everybody reads. You see, and everybody knows that, so they know whether you are doing it right or wrong. And if you don't do it, your heart is going to be lifted up above your brethren. And so he says, he should do all that his heart be not lifted up above his brethren, and that he turn not aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left. So God is not interested in any ruler among his people to be on the right or to be on the left. He's not interested in the conservative. He's not interested in the liberal. He's interested in a righteous person. And neither conservatives nor liberals are righteous people. They've got their own agenda. A mixture of good and evil, yes. And there is good on both sides and evil on both sides. And God is not interested in vomit. That's what a mixture of good and evil is all about. That's how He considers that. You see? And vomit is basically a food that has been corrupted by the acids, you know, as soon as it goes into the belly, into the stomach. And yet, that's what people do. Why? Because they have rejected the law of Moses. What does God say about that? Unless you remember the law of Moses and you come back to it, the government and the people, all, everybody, among the religious people, everyone, unless you do it, God in essence says, I'm coming after you, and you're dead meat. You know, simple language. Unless you return to the law of Moses, as it says through the prophet Malachi, to all ages, and especially to the last generation that is going to see, you know, the final stages of this way of life, of this world the way we know it today, before God brings utter destruction on it, on religion, on the economy, on governments, on everything. And He's going to start a new world order. You see? He's going to start His own global economy and religion and educational system and so forth. And all that is because people have rejected the law of Moses, the constitution that God gave for a nation, any given nation. If a nation wants to have peace, tranquility, blessings, happiness, abundance, plenty, no war, no enemy, no sickness and disease, you see, it's only through the law of Moses. There is no other way. And people can keep themselves all they want. And they can say, you know, the law is done away with, and the clergy are the ones that do it. Why? Because they do not want to come under the government of God. They want to do their own thing. Of course, they don't say it that way, but that's in essence what God says they are doing. They are rebels. And that's what the Apostle Paul was saying about people who think that way, and they call themselves followers of Jesus Christ, ministers of the Gospels. He said, a carnal mind, you see, is an enemy of God. He is not subject to the Torah of God. He hates it. And so all those people who claim to be the ministers of the Gospels, they're all carnal-minded people who are rebels. And God said He's going to come after them because of what they've done to His people. You see? And so that's what He's saying here. You better follow that or else. And so He says, you do that, you read the book of the law, you write it, and you read it so that your heart be not lifted above your brethren. And so speaking about the king, he should do that so that his heart be not lifted up above his brethren. Always remember, you know, there is a queen in England, and she calls the people my subjects. That's not from God. That's a demonic form of looking at people. What do you mean subject? And here we call them G.I. Joes. You see, government issue. How do you call a human being made in the image and likeness of God a government issue? Are we in slavery to the government, to a human being? That's in essence what it means. You see? And that's a demonic form of government when you think about it from God's point of view. God says, you better remember that when you study the law of Moses, my law, my Torah, that those that are in your church to care for, not for yourself, your selfish interests, are your brothers, not your issues, not your subjects. And that's why God said He's coming after the government leaders who have brought all these evils upon the face of the earth and demeaned His own children and step all over them and do whatever they wanted to do with them. And their days are numbered. You see, because God is not a respecter of persons. And He also told us, vengeance is mine, I will repay. So they have no business creating a revolution or fighting the government, because He said He is going to take care of that. So as much as we may hate what is done in government, God commands us at the same time not to rebel, not to resist. Because He's going to take care of that in the right time, in the right manner. In the right manner, that is. And so that's what He says here. He should not go to the right or to the left. In other words, go the right way. You see, there is a left way, the liberal way. There is a right way, the conservative way. You see? And there is God's way, and that's the right way, the righteous way. And so that's what He says here, should not go to the right or to the left, to the end that He may prolong His days in His kingdom, because otherwise He is not. That's in essence what he's saying. He's going to create a pattern that is going to create resistance on the part of people, and pretty soon they'll boot him out and get somebody else, and then somebody else will do his own thing, and they'll boot that person out too. You see? You know, that is when they can. Sometimes they have to suffer for quite a while. That's in essence why we have elections. We're not happy with the people, you know, that are elected because of what they do. You see? So we boot them out. That's not right. If they're righteous, what they do is good. If it's good for the nation, if they're governed by the law of God, if they have the fear of God, there would be no need for elections. You see? But that's a system that we have, unfortunately. And all around the earth, one way or the other, that's what we have. And others are stuck with something else. You know, there is no democracy, and they're even much worse. But in either case, neither of the forms of governments that you find upon the face of the earth, since they are not based on the law of God, are good. You see? You have to tolerate them, that they may be better than others. You see, as some call democracy, it's a list of evil. But nevertheless, it is evil. It's just a list of evil that you find all around us. And not so is the government of God. And so he gives him instructions, and he gives it to every leader on the face of the earth who is willing to listen to the word of God, especially those who claim to be followers of Christ. This is Jesus Christ speaking through Moses. And that exposes them for what they really are when they claim to be so-called Christians, you see, or in the community of Judah, when they think that they are the people of God, and yet they do their own thing. And God says, people who are going to abide by His law, their days are going to be prolonged in their kingdom, in their government. And He says, not only He, but He and His children in the midst of Israel. Well, we know the story. When we study the kingdom in Israel, very few kings followed these instructions. There were very few righteous kings, like King David, and Josiah, and Hezekiah, and I know several kings like that. But the overwhelming majority, as far as the kingdom of Israel, none of their kings was righteous, because all of them totally rejected the law of God. You see? At least in the kingdom of Judah, even the bad kings still returned. At least not really the real bad, but, you know, some bad kings still retained a measure of the fear of God and the law of God. And as for those in Israel, they totally rejected that. Well, that's what you find today. Today, you find basically the same kind of things. You know, people that totally rejected the law of God, they're not going to be governed by it. They couldn't care less about it. They don't even believe that He exists. You see, what kind of rulers are they going to be? Well, we all know that. On our flesh. But not for long. Chapter 18, verse 1, the priests, the Levites, even all the tribe of Levi, shall have no portion nor inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the offerings of the Lord made by fire and His inheritance. In other words, when the people bring their offerings, a part of it goes to God, a part of it goes to the priests and certain sacrifices, a part of it goes to the people that offered it, you see. And that's in essence a spiritual concept that later on Jesus Christ described by saying that unless you eat My flesh and drink My blood, you have no life in you. You see? And He became the sacrifice of humanity, the atonement for sin. But He's talking beyond that. He's talking about the fact that His nature and His character are reflected in His Torah. He's the epitome of it. And unless people are willing to eat it and to drink it day and night, just like He says about the king, you should write it down and meditate on it day and night, you see, they're not going to have life, they're going to have death, because they're going to have, you know, they will have the wrong instructions there that will not produce right results in their lives. And so, when they brought the offerings to the priests, a part of it, you know, was eaten by them too, to symbolize that they are a part of that sacrifice, and they're eating of it, and that should not be just a physical thing, but, you know, there are symbolic lessons in it. They're partakers, in essence, of the sacrifice, just like their own spiritually it was explained. The sacrifice became Jesus Christ, and so in eating His flesh and drinking His blood, spiritually speaking, they become a part of Him. And so In this case, these are physical things, but they had symbolic meanings. Verse 2, and they shall have no inheritance among their brethren. The Lord is their inheritance. You see, the Levites and the priests basically were the ones to be the teachers of Israel and to govern Israel and to be the judges and the officers of Israel. But Israel is their brethren, not their subjects. You see? And so it was also under the king. And he says, they shall have no inheritance among their brethren. The Lord is their inheritance. What does it mean, the Lord is their inheritance? He demanded tithe and offerings. You see? That was his. And so, whatever was given to him, he gave it to them. And so, that's what it means. The Lord is their inheritance. And also the fact that he gave them the law to keep and to study and to learn and to feed the people with it. You see? That's a part of the inheritance that they also had. And it says, you know, the Lord is their inheritance as he has spoken unto them. And this shall be the priests due from the people. So God is going to determine what it is, not them. You see? That's how God rules. He is the head of the constitution. He is the legislator. You see, not them. It's no house of legislation when it comes to God. The law proceeds from him, from his mind, from his nature, from his character, because when it does not, it's going to be a law of iniquity, not a law of righteousness, a law that would benefit the few, a law that is there for selfish interests. And that's basically what much of the law of the land is all about. A lot of it has to do with selfish interests. With lobbyists, you know, who are paying money, who are bribing government officials, legislators, who wine them and dine them, and get what they want from them. You see, that's not of God. That's why God is going to scrape the whole system on a worldwide basis. And so, that's what he's saying here. I'll tell you, you know, what they can take and what they cannot. They're going to, you know, going to do their own thing and decide, just like government decides. Okay, we want more money, we're going to grab more money. All have to do is just pass a law. And who cares about you? You see? We are slaves to them. We are subjects to them. We are not brothers. Because you don't do that to your brother. You see? That tells you an awful lot under what form of government we are, even though it is the least of evil. You know? Even though it is better than any other form of government on the face of the earth, more or less, yet it is evil. And we should always remember that. You see? But there is no evil in the government of God. And so he says, okay, I'll tell you what is it that you can take. And this shall be the priest due from the people, from them that offer a sacrifice, whether it be ox or sheep, that they shall give unto the priest the shoulder and the two cheeks and the maw. So these three items. And the priest cannot say, well, I want this part and that part also. Because then the man who brings it over, the woman, can say, well, you know what the law says, and you're not above the law, even though most people think they are above the law. And certainly there are churches, especially one, a great one, you see, that is all around the earth, calling itself the Mother Church. They say it very plainly, boldly, without shame. We are above the law. We are above the Bible. You see, the Bible is under us. The authority of the church is greater than the authority of the Bible, and we'll change any law we want. That's what they've been doing, you know, for centuries, and people follow that line to their own, you know, hurt and destruction. In other words, we're above God. That's in essence what they're saying. So anybody who follows that form of government and that form of teaching is an idol worshiper, because he's got other gods than God. And people don't realize that. You see? So when the God of the whole earth comes, you see, he's going to make it very plain who is boss. And so he says, this is what they take. And verse 4, the first fruits of the corn, of your wine, and of your oil, and the first of the fleece of your sheep shall you give him. You see, the first fruit. Not half of it, not, you know, 70% of it, not 20% of it, just the first fruit. And basically it was about a tithe. 10%. For the Lord your God has chosen him out of all your tribes to stand to minister in the name of the Lord, him and his sons forever. So, he has his responsibility. He cannot go to work like you do. because otherwise he wouldn't be able to teach you the laws of God that will bring prosperity to your life. You see, he's a physician, he's a healer, he's the educator, he's the instructor. He does an awful lot of things. He's a judge and the officer. You see, he's the justice department, he's the educational department, and so many other fields that he's supposed to take care of. So, in other words, he's earning his keeps. It's not just because he's a Levite or a priest that he give it to him. You know, some people come to other people and say, well, you know, it says in the law of God that he's got to give him money and give it to me. That's all they're after. Covetous or filthy lucre, you know, as the Bible calls it. That is in the English translation, obviously. None of the Jews that wrote the so-called New Testament spoke English. So obviously that was not a language. But in essence, they're talking about covetous people. And God says, that's not the way it should be among you. So God chose him to fulfill his responsibility. Which means that if he does not fulfill his responsibility, if he fulfills only partial responsibility, that's all he gets. He doesn't deserve the whole thing when he does only a little bit of it. And if most of those in religion have the audacity of claiming the whole thing when they do only a little bit. Of course, people do not know the law of God. They do not know the Levitical system. They do not know the tithing system, the entirety of it. You see, what do they know? They just go sit there, you know, in front of somebody who comes and tells them, he just pulls a scripture here and there from the Bible for selfish reasons, oftentimes because of ignorance, doesn't know any better, you see, not maliciously, and throws it at them. Well, God says, give me the money, give me the tithe. You see, of course, they don't say, give it to me. They say, no, give it to God. But you know what they mean by that. And God says, no, he's got a responsibility. He's going there to minister in the name of the Lord. What is he to minister? He's going to teach you the law. He's going to do all those things that God has recorded in the words of the law of Moses that he's supposed to do. And when you all know the law of Moses, you know exactly what he's supposed to do and you know exactly when he's doing it and when he's not. And so I can always remind him, you know, with all due respect, you're not doing this and you're not doing that, you're not doing the other thing. What do you expect the whole thing for? You know, you do your job, you get paid. You don't do your job, you don't get paid. You do half a job, you get, you know, paid for half a job. And of course, people don't think about it because those who are in authority are not interested in people being knowledgeable of the law. You see, otherwise they cannot take advantage of them. They want them to be as ignorant as possible. And so in the past, that's the way it was. Not even today. How many people know the laws of the land? They don't know the laws of the land. You see? They're not there in the legislature, you know, hearing about every single law that comes every single day, and many of them sometimes in one day. And they have books and books and books and books of them. And got to be an expert. And who wants to be an expert to go and study all those laws? You see, majority of people just want to be left alone, do their own thing. And that's how government takes advantage of everybody. And they've got all those professions that, you know, interpret the law to you, and they charge you an arm and a leg, you know, lawyers and CPAs and all kind of people like that, and taxmen, things like that. Now, that's not God's system. He gave a very simple law. Everybody should know what it means, and everybody goes by it, and life is simple and natural and happy for everybody. And nobody takes advantage of anybody. That's in essence what the government of God is all about. That's why we were told, you see, by the King himself when he came on this earth, and from the days of the prophets, and from the beginning of time, to seek for the kingdom of God, the reign of God, the law of God, you see, the law of Moses, and all the amplification, magnification that came later on. Because we're being oppressed and afflicted and in misery and in fear and in trepidation and worries, economic and health-wise and all kind of things like that, because of the world in which we are that is not governed by the law of Moses, that is not governed by the law. And rulers who are not obedient to the law of God, do not fear him, don't know him, couldn't care less about him. That's the reason why all the calamities that are coming in the future, a mega holocaust that God is going to inflict upon humanity, and you read in several places, a trouble that has never been, never will be, a great one. And the scripture basically tells us that when it's all over and done, 90% of humanity is going to be underground. You see? And then God is going to start with a remnant of the 10%. And start all over again. And so This is what it says here. God had chose this ministry, this leadership, to serve in His name, not their name, not do their own thing, for Him and His sons forever. It's an everlasting priesthood. You see? It's not something that was just, well, people say, well, that was in the past. We don't need it anymore. Well, anyway, we shall stop here and have more comments about it later. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.